Yeah, I'm not. Awesome. Who was here last Sunday anyway? Just out of curiosity. Cool, because last Sunday sort of just inspired a little thought that I had, and it was all around what Isaiah shared and around having journeying together. And he talked about being 18 years of marriage and then coming to that tipping point where he could sit down and open up his heart and share something that had profoundly impacted him. And do we all remember this testimony that he shared? Because it was super powerful and super cool, so good job. And it got me, it tied in with something else, that another little thing that someone shared with me. And I don't know if has anyone ever heard about, I don't know if it's a myth or a metaphor or whatever you want to call it, about the frog in the pot. Yeah. So if you don't know, there's the whole, basically, there's a pot of boiling water. And if you put a frog in it, it'll jump out straight away because the extreme temperature. Whereas if you get a pot of cold water, put the frog in there, and then you incrementally just slowly turn it up and bring it slow to the boil, the frog's none the wiser. And it gets to the stage where it is boiling that it's so exhausted, run down, that it can't jump out of the pot, and obviously the frog doesn't make it. But it got me thinking about like relationships and how, especially with those that we have conflict with, and that if we come in hot and heavy, it can just push people away. They'll jump out of that pot and not receive that love that we have for them. Whereas if we to journey with them, sometimes it's just to sit and listen and not to even speak, but as we journey on with them, we can slowly turn that dial, and we can slowly light love on them. We can, we build that relationship, and it gives us opportunity to speak into that. And I guess that's what Isaiah reminded me of. He had that 18 years of just slowly turning the dial, in his relationship, to then allow him not just to, to be able to receive Coral's love, but to have that moment to share that thing, to be vulnerable. And it's no different if, how do I put this? And then if we flip back to what I was talking about when we have conflict with someone, and especially if we've got like opposing morals or core values, it's really hard to have that conversation with someone unless you're super strong in yourself and you can have that off the bat. But if you have that relationship, you sit and you listen and you slowly turn the dial up, you slowly turn it up, you just slowly, incrementally love that person regardless of where they are. Or what they believe, it creates that opportunity where you can have those hard conversations, but you don't push each other away. And it got me thinking, the story that kind of came to mind in the Bible is in Genesis 18, to do with Abraham. And the first part is, he's in his tent with Sarah and three dudes turn up. This is going to be the colloquial version. And Abraham instantly recognizes that these three men, or these three visitors, are from God, and he starts to get the preparations together. He goes and gets the best his best animal, and these three men, they're seers, and they end up telling Abraham that in a year's time he's going to have a son. And then, but Sarah hears this. She's obviously in, I don't know if you've got a kitchen and a tent, but she's doing her bit. She hears this and she giggles and she laughs like, this is impossible. I've been barren for so long, this ain't going to happen. And then what I love is God's like to Abraham, why did she laugh? Why is she giggling away? Like, why didn't she believe me? And then she did the most classic thing anyone could ever do. Abraham asked, why did you laugh? And she says, I didn't. Yeah, like, good job. So I just first, to me, one, I hope that gives you a little bit of a highlight of relationship that Abraham has with God, that whole thing of promises. But the main part of chapter 18 that I love is when it comes to Abraham standing before Sodom, and God tells him what he's going to do with that place. And I'm just going to quickly read a few scriptures and you'll start to see, I guess, the value of relationship. So we'll pick it up in 22. The men turned away and went towards Sodom, but Abraham remained standing before the Lord. Then Abraham approached him and said, "Will you sweep away the righteous with the wicked? What if there are 50 righteous people in the city? Will you really sweep it away and not spare the place for the sake of the 50 righteous people in it? Far be it from you to do such a thing, to kill the righteous with the wicked, treating the righteous and the wicked alike. Far be it from you. Will not the judge of all the earth do it right?" The Lord said, "If I find 50 righteous people in the city of Sodom, I will spare the whole place for their sake." Then Abraham spoke again, "Now that I have been so bold to speak to the Lord, though I am nothing but dust and ashes, what if the number of the righteous is 5 less than 50? Will you destroy the whole city for the lack of 5 people?" "If I find 45 there," he said, "I will not destroy it." Once again he spoke to him, "What if only 40 are found there?" He said, "For the sake of 40, I will not do it." Then he said, "May the Lord not be angry, but let me speak. What if only 30 can be there?" He answered, "I will not do it if I find 30 there." And Abraham said, "Now that I have been so bold to speak to the Lord, what if only 20 can be found there?" He said, "For the sake of 20, I will not destroy it." Then he said, "May the Lord not be angry, but let me speak just once more. What if only 10 can be found there?" He answered, "For the sake of the 10, I will not destroy it." When the Lord had finished speaking with Abraham, he left, and Abraham returned home. Firstly, like, what a boss negotiator. I need him when it comes to talking to my kids. But what the thing I love the most about that is, firstly, I hope it shows you that for Abraham to come to God like that, he must have had a deep, deep relationship with him, a really big history. And if you look at his life, Abraham wasn't squeaky clean. He had his ups and his downs. But through that slow turning of the dial, through the slow simmering, they built up this extremely strong relationship. And what I love about it, though, is when Abraham comes to God, he doesn't go, "Yo, don't do this." He speaks to God's character first. He speaks to, you know, he humbles himself first. He says, see if I can find what I'm looking for. "May the Lord not be angry, but let me speak." He speaks, he comes in humility. And then he talks about, "Far be it from you, will not the judge of all the earth do it right?" He speaks to God's character. And that's what relationship gives us. When we spend time with people, we get to know who they are. And that, so when we do come to these moments in time where it's when we need to have these hard conversations, we come in humility and we speak to the character of the person. We'll just let that sit there for a minute. So I guess today, I'm always mindful that if I ever get the chance to share, I'm never here to tell you guys what to think or what to do. I just always want to challenge you on how you think. And I guess we could all think of someone that we clash with. I guess my first question for you is, like, what sort of relationship do you have with them, first and foremost? And I think the goal of any interaction with anyone is relationship. So I understand that we can't have an Abraham-God relationship with every human being that walks the planet. It's just not possible, right? That takes time, it takes investment. But what we can do is come with love first, be prepared to listen. And sometimes, I guess, where am I going? We go back to the two pots. To me, the water in the pot is love, right? And we can have all the love in the world for everyone, but it can be so overwhelming that if we just lavish someone in that, they can run away. But if we have the chance, if we can come in gentle, and again, just turn that dial slowly. I'll just keep coming back to that. It makes it easier, I guess, easier for them to receive, because we meet them where they're at. And I've just been thinking about for myself work lately. If you're not aware, obviously, a police officer, so I get to meet people in all sorts of different places in their lives. And I know I've been trying to work out what makes me different to my colleagues, and I can tell you now that when I go to a job, I don't look at them for what they're doing or who they are or who they say that they are. I make sure, regardless of the situation, I come in with love and treat them like I would anyone else. And that's that whole thing of, like, I could come in hot and heavy with the law and lay that down on them. I could tell them how trash they are. I could tell them that, they should know better, etc. But if you go in and you treat them as a human, it's amazing the reaction that you get. I can't tell you how many times on my way to a job I get told that these people are the scum of the earth. They will want to fight you. They will spit at you. They are going to want to take you to town. We turn up and they just talk to me like a normal person. And we leave there, and I know some of those that have been in the job for a while, they can't believe the interaction that we've had with that person. I know what it is. I know what it is. And the cool thing is that I've got those that I work with all the time are starting to ask what the difference is, and we're getting to have those conversations. Again, that's just that slowly turning the dial. So although those that I had the one-off interactions with, right, are still coming in soft, but you still, I guess the goal was love, but the cool thing is the wider it starts, people start to notice around you and creates those opportunities. Because I can tell you now, if I came in day one and said, this is how you do it, you got to love people, etc., I would have been, let's just say, ostracized, I think would be a good word. All right, so I guess, for my part anyway, I just challenge you that when you especially come into people that you're struggling or having conflict with, just think about turning down the dial on the pot and just have like a normal conversation and see them as human, and don't worry about what your differences are. Just get to know each other first and create that safe place to have that conversation. Cool. So what we're going to do now, we're going to pray for each other again. We're just going to pray. I think that we would just have like, it's almost like a boldness and the courage to turn that dial down, to slow things down and be prepared to listen, and just remember the goal of like all relationship is to love each other. So if we, grab someone quickly, spend a couple of minutes praying that, and then I will pray for you, and then we'll get old Big Hartley up here. But I just thank you that each and every one of us has a heart after you, and I just thank you with that comes relationship and the goal of love. And I just thank you that you've got the master switch to the oven, Lord, that helps guide that dial. And I just pray that it would be slow to turn and quick to love. Thank you, Lord. This is Daniel. That's his intro.
Yeah. Hey, guys. I'm Daniel. So what we're going to do now is I'm going to get you into groups and we're going to pray for each other. No, I'm just kidding. But what I am really going to say is I've got to give it up for Blake, because a big part of my role at Zeal is running youth events, and I've got to worry about a dance crew, I've got to worry about my singers, I've got to worry about my youth volunteers, I've got to worry about the crowd, I've got to worry about the people at the door bringing people in. And I know what it's like to run an event. It's a lot of pressure and there's a lot of work behind it. And to be given a Sunday with no worship team and Daniel, it's like a disaster on a stick. So Blake has done very well with the little resources he's been given. And I can see why he's in his leadership position. I honestly do not know how this is going to go. You know the song by Bon Jovi, Living on a Prayer? That's this morning. I'm living on a prayer because I've thrown this all together in the last 2 days. I've probably spent 2 hours on this. And that's literally simply because I've been really busy. And I'm not going to make out like I wanted to put this first. The stuff I put first, I needed to. I had a youth event last week where I was speaking to 300 kids. So I focused on that sermon first. And then I'm going to school and one of the kids smashes a window and he's swearing at me, and I had to sort that out. And things just get pushed to the bottom. And I'm sorry, but this sermon did. So I've thrown it all together in 2 days. But what we're going to be speaking about today is Joseph, an amazing man of God, and just his journey. And then I'm going to switch that and relate it to my journey in youth work and how through this story and watching my own story, I've watched God simply grow me, and as he grew Joseph, to go into places Joseph would never expect to be. And God's got me in positions that I'd never expect to be in. And then church will finish quite early. We can mingle and be a family as we are and have some fun. So, Joseph's early life. Joseph's story starts off with a 17-year-old young boy working the flocks, working his father's flocks of sheep. He's a shepherd, as all his ancestors were, Abraham, Isaac, and it was through the generations that this is what they did. And the story starts off with Joseph. But Joseph's story starts off with his first mistake. He was a snitch. The guy, the one thing we're told never to do, the Bible taught us first. It's like, man, don't snitch on your brothers. I don't know if you guys were like this growing up, but when my brothers would snitch on me to my mom, I'd beat them up. And that's what Joseph's brothers were going to do to Joseph, because he was going to their dad and he was giving him a bad report about his brothers. And big brothers don't like that. I was a big brother. So Joseph's story starts off with him giving a bad report to his brothers, and this causes his brothers to not like him very much. And when I say very much, I mean very much. The Bible puts it very descriptively that they very much didn't like him. In Genesis 37:2, it says this. This is the account of Jacob's family line. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bala and the sons of Zalpha, his father's wives, and he brought their father a bad report about them. So Joseph's story starts off with drama from the get-go. He's giving a bad report about his brothers to the father. But you know what I really love about the start of this story? The one line at the start that makes it all worth it is the fact that it starts off with this. This is the account of Jacob's family line. Joseph, a young man of 17. The account of Jacob's family line is a story about Joseph. It's not a story about Joseph, then Benjamin, then Daniel or Dan, and then the other 12 sons of Jacob. It's a story about Joseph and what God was doing in Joseph's life. That's the account of Jacob's story. That ends up being the account of Israel's story, and that story affects us today. God was doing something big in this young 17-year-old snitch, and we're about to read it through our Bible. God called this young man to a great purpose. And the next thing that happened is God speaks to Joseph through a dream. Joseph actually ends up having two dreams. One where I think it's wheat. I've got it written down. It's wheat, and another one where it's stars, and there's these bundles of wheat coming bow to Joseph, then all the stars bow to him, including the sun and the moon. And he reports this to his father, he reports this to his brothers, and this causes more animosity. It causes more hatred towards Joseph, because now he's not only ratting on them, he's going to them and saying, I'm better than all of yous. One day I'm going to be on the top. God gave me this dream, and I'm going to be on the top, man. And his brothers didn't like this very much. This is where Joseph's story starts to get really dark. Because I know most of you know the story about Joseph. It gets really dark for Joseph. And I think sometimes as we read our Bibles, we take these stories for granted. We read over them and we're like, man, God's going to work out. But I can't imagine what it would have been like for Joseph in that situation that I'm about to share. To have your brothers basically first try and kill you and then sell you into slavery. Like for Joseph, that would have been one of the most horrid moments in his whole life. That would cause for some great counseling these days. But for us, it's a juicy story. It's a Bible story that makes it, when we read it, because we can see it from this end, juicy, and one of my favorite stories in the book. Here's my notes. See, one day, Jacob sends his son, Joseph, to find his brothers and bring a report back because they're out tending the flocks. So Jacob goes for a walk to find his brothers, but his brothers see him first from a distance, and his brothers go, ah, there's the little brother. There's the one who's always telling on us. Here's the one we don't like. Here's what we'll do. We'll kill him and get rid of them. And that's their plan. But then one of the brothers step in and say, no, let's not kill him. We don't want blood on our hands. Let's just throw him in the river, throw him in a Christine, and let him die there. Nature can kill him. Nowadays, brother, you'd be prosecuted for that. But back then, I guess not. So they throw him in this Christine, and then these Ishmaelite traders come past, and they decide we're going to make a quick buck off our brother instead. So they sell him to these Ishmaelite traders, and these Ishmaelite traders take Joseph all the way to Egypt. And at that moment, Joseph would have been in one of the most toughest situations in his life. He's literally been done off by his older brothers. But in that moment, the greatest part of the story, one of the greatest parts, God's grace is working. And that's how it can be for us sometimes. We can be in a situation where everything is going against us and we feel like we're in a river, we're in a Christine, and our own family is trying to do with us, but yet God's doing something amazing. God's doing something miraculous, and he's sending Ishmaelite traders so we can get sold into slavery. Like, that's nuts, right? That's crazy to think that God would, at the perfect time, send some traders past so that Joseph doesn't have to die in a Christine and he's going to go to Egypt. And there's more to the story. Because God's grace was working in the chaos. So now I'm going to jump to my story for a little bit and talk about my start journey with youth work and how I got into it. Because I remember the start of my story started in a room with a young man, 18, who was super high on drugs, very depressed, about to commit suicide, and says a prayer on a whim, just a prayer off the cuff, and Jesus enters my room, and I end up following him, and it completely changed my life. I remember that day like it was yesterday to this day. And I just remember after that day, I just remember everything changed for me. Something in me became like a new person, if you would. And I remember I started to read. I started to read my Bible, and I started to flip through it. I couldn't read till I was 18. And I started driving, and this sounds crazy. I started driving legally because me and my boys used to take our mum's cars. We didn't care, and we'd just drive. Like, we knew how to drive, so why not just do it? And I remember telling them, bro, I ain't doing that anymore. I'm going to get me a license. So I got saved at 18, and I got me a license. I started cleaning my room. Like, that sounds crazy, but I was an 18-year-old boy. I used to just throw clothes everywhere. And I used to, my room was a mess. And I met Jesus, and for some reason, he gave me the desire to have a clean room. Like, that's got to be God. The craziest thing God did to me is he took one of my greatest loves in life, and he told me to stop playing video games. Seriously, I remember he goes, these things are a distraction to you. By the way, I still play them now, but at the time, he took them away. But the craziest thing about that story, I remember I had this PS Vista, right? It was a $300 console that you could carry around in your pocket. And I walked into church with it one day, 6 years ago. And in service, I felt God. To this day, I still don't know if it was him or it was just my emotions, but I felt God tell me to throw it in a trash can. So I walked out those doors and I threw it in a trash can out those windows, out on that street. A $300 console. And I look back and the lady is pulling it out of the bin. No joke. No joke. But that's what God did. God changed my life. He took this kid who literally couldn't look at himself in the mirror because he was disgusted with what he's seen, and he made him clean his room. He made him get a license. He gave me self-worth and dignity by changing the actions in my life. He gave me a purpose, and he started to fill my heart with a desire for youth work. Now, that didn't come naturally because I remember people like Kim and other people in the house would pray youth work over me, and I'd be sitting in their prayers and they'd be praying, oh, you know, I see you working with the youth of the city. And I'd be sitting there going, man, I don't want to work with no children. Those things are tough work. And I look at where I am today and I'm like, man, yeah, that definitely was God. But I remember I used to work at a place called Brooklyn's VIP Pet Products, and it was a great place to work, but I'd sit there and I just had this sense in me that God had a greater calling on my life. God had something that he wanted me to do, and he started to open my eyes that was youth work. Because one of the greatest things I understand about my past is that I was going down such a bad path is because I was missing a father figure. I was missing someone to teach me this is the ways of a man. I was raised by a mum and four sisters, so just like this morning, I just had to wing life. Now, I'm not going to go into too much detail about that because I've shared it many times here before. But once I met Jesus and he started doing these small things in my life and changing my life around, I started to realize that if I had just had someone doing that for me earlier, then my life would have looked so much different. So God put a desire in my heart to be a father figure or an adult male role model for younger men. And I just started doing it like just at church. I'd just say hi to the younger men. I'd just start slowly working alongside them. Nothing super intentional. The other thing that I always knew that this was a calling on my life is because I was the oldest boy in a family of seven, so I naturally had to step in to the father figure role because all our dads were gone and our stepdads were not the best of people. So naturally, I'd always be looking after my little brothers. I'd be babysitting. I'd be looking after my sisters and things like that. So I naturally learned how to work with young people through these times. So God was doing something in me from a young age, and I didn't realize it to this point in time. And the other thing God did to me made me really want a family one day. My thought pattern was, well, if I'm really bad with other people's kids, it's a lot of practice, so I'll be finally good with my own. And then the most amazing thing happened to me. This lady called Tash, who used to come to this church, recognizes this youth passion in me. She's seen it from a mile away, and she sits me down one day and goes, we're having a meeting this Friday. I want you to come along, and we'll talk about you volunteering to help with the young men and youth group. And I was like, yo, that sounds sick. I'll be there. Also was dating a girl at the time I really liked, and she just started doing coffee. And an hour before the meeting, she's like, meet me at this cafe because I've got to make all these coffees and I want you to drink them and tell me how they are. I drank six coffees and ended up going to Tasha's meeting, like jumping on the chair, like no joke. I must have looked crazy, but she still gave me the position. And then me, Tash, and Olivia Nielsen, and I think there was a couple others, we just started running this youth group upstairs, which was like all Christian kids, and it was an amazing time. We seen kids come to Christ. We had them running around town. We'd have some pretty fun times in the back there, and that went on for about 6 to 8 months, I'm pretty sure, maybe a year, and it was just my first introduced time into youth ministry, into youth work, that was actually official. And I still remember to this day, so I work for Zeal Taranaki, and Zeal Taranaki got set up here about 3 years ago now, and it's legit, in my opinion, and this is biased because I work for them, it's one of the best youth centres in Taranaki, but I still remember 3 years, 4, 5, whatever years ago, before we actually became an official centre, my friend Alison Bell goes to me, there's a meeting with council and I want you to be there, it's for youth. So I ended up at this meeting, just down the road there, with this guy called Nate, Stacey Hitchcock from council, and all these other people. And here's me, this guy, a year into youth work, just sitting there like, yeah, I met Jesus and I just love kids. They got me involved with all these events and I just started volunteering. So this was before Luke was on the scene. This was before we had the Mayfair. This was before we were on Cook Street. This was the first meeting that Zeal ever had in New Plymouth to see if it wanted here. And somehow God had me there and now I'm here. God was doing something in my life, just like he was doing in Joseph's life. And I never thought I'd be where I am today. But what we're going to do now is we're going to jump back to Joseph's life because Joseph's life is still quite interesting. So Joseph ends up in Egypt, right, because of the Ishmaelite traders. They take him in and they sell him to Potiphar, a high official. He's actually captain of the guard for Pharaoh. So Joseph ends up in Egypt, sold to a high official by the grace of God, and God blesses everything he does. When Joseph's in this house, being looked after quite well, God blesses his hands to the point where he's put in charge of everything and Potiphar can basically put his feet up. Now, if I asked you, why do you think God blessed Joseph? You guys can speak. If you want to, you don't have to. I've dealt with quiet crowds before, but I'm just saying, I am asking you, why do you think God blessed Joseph? Does anyone know? Because he was chosen by God? That is very correct. Yeah. Exactly. God had a great purpose for him. He grew up alone. Yeah. Yeah, that's really good. So three things I learned from reading the story is that it was so the eye of his master would see it. The Bible says that God blessed Joseph so that when he was in Potiphar's house, he would succeed. Genesis 37:24 puts it this way. I'm reading from the NLT. I don't really mind what translation you read, so I'm pretty new school. But I'm reading from the NLT. The Lord was with Joseph, so he succeeded in everything he did as he served in the house of Egypt. Hold on. The Lord was with Joseph, so he succeeded in everything he did as he served in the home of his Egyptian master. So the way my translation puts it is that God caused Joseph to succeed so that the Egyptian master would see it and put him in that position. So first one, God did it so the Egyptian master would see it. God wanted to bless the house of this person through Joseph. It was to keep Joseph safe, like you said. Joseph had been through some rough times and he was called and chosen by God, so God wanted to keep him safe. And thirdly, it was because God had something much bigger planned for Joseph's life. Something bigger than Joseph could ever dream. Spoiler alert, I bet Joseph did not think he'd one day end up in charge of Egypt. Could you imagine going through slavery, ending up in Potiphar's house, to think that you'd one day be in charge of Egypt next to the guy who runs the city? It wouldn't cross your mind. Then as every good story goes, there's drama. Because the Bible describes Joseph as a handsome, well-built young man, and Potiphar's wife sees this, and she wants a taste of this young Hebrew man. You know, she's got a keen eye on this young foreign boy, and so it says day after day she started to try and seduce him. She would basically leave herself open for him. But Joseph, our young hero, was a faithful man to God and to his master. And Joseph didn't want to dishonor his journey with God because he had been through so much. He had seen what God had done, and he didn't want to dishonor that. So he refused this woman, and this woman eventually basically blames Joseph, gets him in a whole bunch of trouble, and Joseph ends up in prison. It just goes down the hill again for Joseph. He's now in prison. His father's favorite kid, slavery, Potiphar's house, prison. It's just up and down. I'm telling you, man, emotional trauma. I work with a lot of kids in trauma. I'm telling you, this guy would have a lot of stuff to work through. But he ends up in prison. These two guys come to him about these dreams. They share their dreams, and by the grace of God, as most of you will know, Joseph interprets the dreams and they come true. And in Joseph's mind, he goes, this is my chance. I can see that grace of God thing working. This is my way out. When you get out and you stand next to Pharaoh again, make sure you tell him about me. And God's like, oh, no, Joseph. You do see the grace, but I've got different plans. Because one of them, the one who gets out, totally forgets about Joseph. And he's left in prison for a long time. Psalms 105:16 puts it this way. He called for a famine on the land of Canaan, cutting off its food supply. Then he sent someone to Egypt ahead of them, Joseph, who was sold as a slave. They bruised his feet with fetters and placed his neck in an iron collar. Until the time came to fulfill his dream, the Lord tested Joseph's character. Then Pharaoh sent for him, free the ruler of the nation, opened his prison door. Joseph was put in charge of all the king's household. But what I love about that, the Psalms here says it was to test Joseph's character. It was to prepare him for all of this. Joseph was getting used to seeing this grace thing in his life. He recognized that, but he didn't realize God had a little bit more time, a little bit more prepping, a little bit more character growth in him. Do you know, when I was first saved, I would have that word a lot. Because I was like, man, I just want to go for Jesus. I just want to go to the nations. I just want to fulfill these dreams. I was a young man, and I just wanted to do a whole lot. And every word I'd get given was, you need to be patient and wait because you've got a lot of growth to do. And I'm thankful for growth because I would be way out of my depth if it wasn't for growth. Now, jump back to my life. I remember when I first got employed for youth work at this church. So basically, I was at that Brooklyn's place. I was actually starting to get real fed up. I loved my volunteer gigs, but I was just sick of doing a job 40 hours a week to get paid, then to do what I loved as a volunteer. And I'd sit at work every day and I'd pray to God. I was like, God, I'm sick of this and I want out. I want to do youth work. What do I do? And God would always say, be patient and just wait, because you need to wait for the right timing, just like Joseph. And I remember that was my prayer at work. Every day I'd go into work and I hated it, and I'd sit there and pray, get me out of this. And then I remember Chris comes to me one day and he's like, look, we really love the youth ministry call on your life. We have an opportunity to create a position for that so you can do it better and do it well. And I was like, bro, I'd love to. I just can't do 2 days a week and live off that. So I was also going to look at doing school teaching for a bit. And as I was looking at that, it's my first time I met Luke Gully, the guy who runs Zeal. And we just had a meeting. He was just catching up with the church leaders. And he was like, hey, I love what you do. Loved how you used to help with Zeal, wondering how we can plug your church back in. And I was like, that sounds cool, man. He's like, oh, if you know anyone who wants a job, just tell them to apply here. And I applied for the job. And I remember I spent so much excruciating time on the CV. I got two of my teacher friends to look at it. I sent it to Luke email. I applied on the online application. And long story short, by the grace of God, these two positions fell into place. Where I was working 2 days here and 2 days at Zeal, 3 days at Zeal a week. But it was crazy working here because I remember my first night of employment leading youth group, there were three kids. We went from a group of about 20 church kids to the next term once I came on employment, there were three kids. And I sat up here and I had Sam Bell, his little brother, and another kid called Aaron. And we sat here. Oh, and Angel was there. So there were four kids. And I was like sitting there. I was like, God, what are you going to do, bro? I can't do this with four kids, man. Like, you called me into this. I felt like it was you. Either I've heard wrong. When you need to come and fill this space. The week later, we had youth group, and I met all these kids from Marfowl, and they ended up coming to youth group. And we ended up having about 40-plus kids a night, on some nights, 20 to 40. And we had some really cool stuff happen in that time. I remember one time I was just driving down Cook Street, because that's where Zeal used to be, and I walked past these two young dudes, and one of them's got his blue bandana down here, and he's like walking down with his cousin. And I had no idea who these kids were, and I just pull up next to them, and I'm like, yo, brothers, it's about 6:30. I'm like, well, I'm about to head into youth group. I was just picking up some kids. You boys want to come? I'm like, yeah, check us, I'll come. And they both jump in the van, and they end up down here. And as we're playing games, no joke, as we're playing games, this one girl, Jade, who had been coming to youth for ages, had this real wasted leg. And she's sitting there and she's like, I can't play. And Ellie and a couple others prayed for her. And this girl's leg was just completely fine again. And she's like freaking out as the youth do jump around going, my leg's healed. She's crying and everything. And I'm just like chilling because like we're semi-used to this. And this kid, Reese, is going, nah, bro, that's fake. She's faking it. And I was like, bro, she wasn't playing the game before, but she's playing now. I'll tell you what, come to church tomorrow and see what God does. And he was like, yeah, okay, I'll come to church tomorrow. And I'll never forget it because we were sitting over there and Richard was up here. And he was like, okay, anyone who's sick, put your hand up. We're going to pray for you and we're going to see some healing. And Reese was over there and his hand went up. And I didn't even pray for healing. I just went and put my hand on him. And I was like, God, touch this kid. And he just starts swearing in the middle of church. And he's going, holy, holy. And I was like, whoa, what's wrong? And he's like, bro, my throat's better. I'm healed. I'm like, that's one way to praise God, brother. But this kid got touched by God and he just started coming to youth group. And we got to watch this young man journey so far. And I'm not going to tell you now his life's perfect and he's following God and he's going to seminary and all of this. The young man comes from a really rough home. I'm serious, like really rough. Me and Ali used to drive around Cook Street and we'll go and introduce to the parents. And the stepdad comes out and he's got a fist patched on his face and he's telling him about his rehab product. And I'm like, rehab process. And I'm like, bro, I just met you. I just wanted to say hi to the parents. I'm really here for your kids. I don't like working with the parents. Trust me, they're half the work. But long story short, I was seeing all these amazing things happen. And I was watching God work through my life. From a dream, he pitted me when I was looking after my little brothers to the point where when I was volunteering and learning new skills for Tash and ones like Olivia, to then now I'm running a youth group and all these crazy things are happening. I remember, man, we got to the point where we had all these young ladies coming from the hood and they'd just be hungry when they got to church. So me and Ali were like, let's just cook massive feeds and then we'll just play some games. It was heaps of fun. I remember then the next season that God threw at me was we had half these kids coming from the hood and then randomly out of nowhere, all these kids started coming from like Girls High and all the high schools and they're coming from really nice families. And I had to learn as a youth leader, how do I get these really rough kids to intermix with these really nice kids who are both super scared of each other? Like I'd be dropping kids off and they'd be like, no, Daniel, I just want to beat them up. They look at me funny. I'm like, no, they don't. You're just afraid of them, all right? It's okay. Just be their friend. And then this group's going, we don't know how to mingle with them. They're scary. And I'm like, no, they're not scary. They're actually really nice kids. You just got to get to know them. And they started doing it. They actually started becoming really good friends. And then God opened up the opportunity with Zeal, right? Actually, before I get there, I'll just jump to Joseph, then I'll jump back. Because Joseph, right, he's in prison, and then it's some time later that he gets out and he meets Pharaoh, and then he's basically put second in charge in Egypt. The Bible says he's basically put in charge of Egypt, but people just recognize the authority of Pharaoh. And this young man, Joseph, ends up saving the world through a crisis, or his part of the world. But the Bible says he saves the world through crisis because of the wisdom and the calling God had put on his life. When Joseph was a young man dreaming in the field, he would have never dreamed of being the ruler of Egypt. When he was sold into slavery, he would have never dreamed of that. When he's in prison, he would have never dreamed of that. And then God throws him in this position where eventually the original dream of his brothers bowing down to him happens. Now, to save time, I'm just going to leave Joseph's story there. Genesis, go and read it. It's one of my favorite books. It's beautiful. And especially Joseph's story. There's so much gold in there. But just as God put Joseph in a position he never imagined to be in, God did that with me. Because it wasn't too much longer where, even though I wanted to look at God and study school teaching, God called me to youth work, and now I'm in schools working with kids for the majority of the day. So the way my day works is I'm from 9 to 3 at schools working with young men who are disconnected in class just like me. And I get to school in the morning and the teachers go, "Thank God you're here." So-and-so has been throwing balls at windows or is swearing at teachers. And I'm equipped by God because of what I went through. And he put me in this position without me ever dreaming of it. I never would have dreamed of being where I am today. Last night, to 11 o'clock, I was running a large-scale event at Zeal with the help of this guy over here, Jari and Sam. And we've got a youth team and we cook all this food. We set it all out. We've got youth on the door. We've got youth serving drinks. It's all fizzy drink. But I would never have thought God would put me in a position where I'm managing people making food. I'm the one eating the food, and last night I'm cooking sausages and stuff, and I'm like, yo, we got to get it out the door. And God's put me in a position now where I'm working in a community for the better of the community. Just like Joseph was working in Egypt for Egypt in God's calling, I feel God placed me in Zeal because I have to work with so many different community groups I naturally wouldn't have worked of in church work. And God did that by raising me up through church work, through the trials of youth leading, to get me to a point now where I'm in schools, I'm in community groups, I'm meeting with council members. And this is some dumb kid from the hood, man. This is some dumb kid who used to smoke weed and hated the look of himself in the mirror. And God's now got me here just like Joseph. And that's really my whole spiel today. That's my wing on a prayer, is the fact that this is how I'll end it, right? I was talking to a young lady last night. And she is definitely not a Christian, and she was very vocal about that, but she has some kind of faith. And we're just talking about God and what that looks like for us. That's me and Jari over here, who's such a faithful young man. But now we're talking to this young lady, and this is what I said to her. I was like, do you know the one reason that I have hope and I can tell all these kids that I believe in them? It's simply for the fact when I was 17, I had no hope in myself, and I hated the look of myself. And then I met God, and I realized there was gold in me, and I am doing things I never thought I'd do. And I realize I have purpose. So last week, young lady, when I got up on stage and I spoke to 300 youth and I told them they all had gold in them, I know it's true because I know the one who placed it there. So just like that, all of you have gold in you. It doesn't matter if you're 28, you leading youth. It doesn't matter if you're 17 and you're the most amazing dancer in the world. It doesn't matter if you're a grandparent. It doesn't matter. No matter where you are, there's gold in you and God placed it there. Just like Joseph. And now I'm just going to hand it to Blake because I didn't really come up with an end as I finished this morning. So we might break off into groups and pray. No, I'm kidding. Sure.
Yeah, I don't know what to say to that. Because that's what we were going to do, but we're not now. Thanks, Daniel. That was super awesome. And all I could think about when you were sharing that is, like, he's the ultimate, or Joseph or Daniel, they're like living testimonies of the frog in the pot. Just think, he's been in that pot. God's been slowly turning it up, and hit a bit of a speed bump, so he just turned it down again. You just think about those ups and downs that he was talking about, and then he turns it up, hits another speed bump, turns it down again, and then all of a sudden, he gets heaps of momentum and he cranks that thing up. And it's just like, I just love the natural picture of that. So, yep, that's us for today. If you want any prayer, come on up. Someone will be willing. All right, no. You know what? You guys can all go home. See ya. Seriously, there's the door. But honestly, if anyone wants prayer for, if you've got sickness or something's inspired you today, Daniel will come back on up and he'll pray for you. And I'm happy to pray for you myself. Otherwise, have a good talk, have a good laugh. And doors shut at 11:30. Cool. Thanks, guys.